Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I am your host, Jeff Nadeau. Welcome in for another week, another show, another sit down. We've got a great show, as always, planned for you today. This is episode 66. Today, we're going to get into a terrific biography on the man, the myth, the legend, one of the greatest consiglieres in the history of the mafia. You're probably asking, who the hell are we talking about this week? We're going to talk about one of Chin Gigante's main men, one of the more powerful people in the history of the Genovese crime family. We're going to talk today about Bobby Manna. And a lot of people don't know a ton about Bobby Manna, but he's one of those guys that, like a Neil Migliore, really is super powerful and not a lot of people know about him. Has had a wild life. He is still alive. He's in his 90s. We're going to get into him today. But before we do that, we're going to get into a Q&A. We've not done a Q&A for a while. Got a lot of questions here that I want to talk about. Before we do that, I want to go over a little housekeeping. I first want to thank everybody for the great comments I received about last week's show. You know, I don't listen a lot to the shows back, but I have to say, I listened to the show back last week, and I thought it really was one of our best episodes. There's been some memorable episodes we've done, either on my own or with Blackjack. You know, obviously, I enjoyed doing the Tony Salerno episode. I thought Tony Accardo was great. Obviously, our first episode with Gigante. Ones like Cabani Savage were particularly enjoyable for me. But I got to tell you, I thought last week's episode was high level, and I really enjoyed it. I thank everybody, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't listened to it, please make sure you check it out. As always, if you haven't, make sure you go give us a follow on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. A lot of people ask me all the time, how do I submit questions? How do we get involved with the Q&A? That's one of the reasons. It's one of the ways. And also, make sure you go check us out on YouTube as well. Check us out, the Sit Down, a Mafia History podcast. We are approaching 20,000 subs on YouTube. And I urge you, if you enjoy this show, you will like that show. It's smaller gangsters, ones that maybe we don't have time for an hour for. We do live shows occasionally, all sorts of stuff. So make sure you go check us out. One thing, sadly, though, we do as well is we're now becoming, and I think in a way it's great for the show, because we're now looked at as a news, not a news organization, but we do report the news. And on Friday, we had to report the unfortunate news of the passing of the great Tony Sirico. And I wanted to take 5 or so minutes and really remember the great actor that Tony Sirico was. Tony Sirico died on Friday at the age of 79. And like I always say, if you're living under a rock, particularly the people listening to this show, I don't think there's many of them, but if you haven't seen Tony Sirico, you don't know Tony Sirico. Sirico was an actor mostly in a lot of mob films. He played Paulie Walnuts Galtieri on The Sopranos, and he was just known for so many great roles. Obviously, you know, just really some elite films. I mean, he was in, a lot of people don't remember, he was in Goodfellas. He was in a film called 29th Street that's criminally underrated. You know, he was in, you know, Casino. He was an extra, but he was in Casino. He was in the very terrific Gotti, the original, 1996. And I think one thing about why we don't remember him in that film, because he actually had a decent part, is he played a character, and it was one of the only characters, and in fact, I think it was the only character in the film that was not a real person. It was based on a real person, but they changed the name of him. He played in Gotti a character called Joe DiMiglia, and I think that had to do with he played the John Carniglia. He was in Miami Vice. He was in a film called Witness to the Mob. That kind of patterns Sammy Gravano's life. He was in Lilyhammer with Silvio Dante's character, played by Stevie Van Zandt. He was in Family Guy. Just a terrific character actor, terrific film actor, movie actor, was nominated for Screen Actors Guild. But it's really his life before acting that is so fascinating. For anyone that doesn't know, Tony Sirico actually was from Bensonhurst. And by the age of 30, he had been arrested almost 30 times. He was a mobster. He was not a made man, but he was surely an associate. He was on record with Jerry Greeneyes Clemenza, the Colombo crime family, and really late into his life, he associated with gangsters. He committed many crimes, beat people up, was very feared, always had a gun on him, robbed a lot of people, actually spent about 4 years in prison in the early 70s, and decided, you know, one day in prison that he was going to change his life. And he took up acting and ended up, you know, getting a role in a film called Crazy Joe back in 1974. And from then on, he would find his way into film and ultimately into TV. Just a fascinating person and a guy that really, until his death, never wavered from who he was, ever. And I always go back to an appearance he had at introducing his brother, who was a Catholic priest, at a awards dinner. And he talked about the differences between he and his brother. You know, he was this like kid from the streets, and his brother, you know, went a different way in life and became a priest. And he really would never get away from his roots. I mean, as I said, he consorted with gangsters really up until the end. He was actually caught, I believe, in the early 2000s, late 90s, actually at a Colombo Christmas party. He was caught by FBI surveillance at the time. And I know for a fact that the only way he would take the role of Paul Lee Walnuts was he was told and basically promised by David Chase that he would not be made into a cooperator. And that's something that, you know, is just so fascinating about Tony Sirico. He was a gangster who gave up the life and really is probably one of the more successful gangsters. You know, it's funny because in this show, we always have a poor ending for the most part with these people. We've done 65, almost 66 episodes. And with the exception of one, Antonio Accardo, all of these people have been to prison. But there's one thing that Tony Sirico did that none of these people were able to do. Tony Sirico was a gangster who changed his life and ultimately left and became very much loved and made a lot of money. And he was world famous. And it's just interesting that acting, that acting bug caught him. And, you know, I'm sure it changed his life and I'm sure he owes a lot to it. And, you know, I, for one, you know, I might come across a little goofy here, maybe, I don't know, but I was pretty upset about this. I, you know, he was my childhood. You know, I remember growing up, you know, people ask me all the time about how I got into doing this show. You know, my earliest memories of the mafia was on Sunday nights. You know, I'm 12, 13, 14 years old. And my mother and father, you know, it was appointment TV every Sunday night. Sopranos is on. And I couldn't watch it for the first couple seasons, but I would sit outside of the room and I remember seeing Paulie Walnuts, you know, all the different great scenes he was in. It was like a part of my childhood. It was nostalgic. I'll leave you with a great quote that makes me think, and I'm sure all of you remember this. In an episode, Paulie's with his mother, and his mother introduces him to some of her friends. And he remembers them from when they were younger, and he was a lot younger. And he mentions that, you know, I don't understand, you know, when I was a little kid, you were old women, and now I'm old and you're still old. And that's kind of in a way how I felt about Tony Sirico. You know, we knew him as that, you know, kind of really healthy guy that, you know, was in his 50s when he did The Sopranos, you know, early 60s, you know, and 20-ish years later, you know, he's in his 80s, you know, or late 70s. And, you know, people die. It's sad. It's a part of our life. But we look back on a great career. Tony Sirico was loved. He was terrific. May he rest in peace. Let's get into the Q&A this week. We've got a lot of great questions that I want to get to. And then we'll get into Bobby Manna. It's not a particularly long biography, but it's an interesting one. Let's do some Q&A. We'll start it out with Gavin Cook. Thanks for listening, Gavin. He says, a Walking Dead-style zombie apocalypse has taken over the United States. God forbid. You need to begin a community and keep it well-funded, well-armed, well-organized, and perhaps more importantly, well-protected to survive. What mob or gangsters do you begin your new community with? So this is a great question, right? So as in anything, I want a good mixture of people. So I came up with four. Now I'll start with four. Obviously, I would want Carlos Marcello because of how good he is at really leading, getting people in his pocket in this new world, maybe making deals with the enemy, getting rid of the enemy. He's shrewd. I want Carlos Marcello. I want Tony Salerno for his money-making opportunity and ability. And those two at the top, I mean, they're probably the two biggest earners in the history of the mafia. I want Neil Delacroce because I think in the end, we have to look back at his ability as consigliere and a counsel and to be really good at that. He's also not going to want to fight and take out people at the top. And right now we just need people. We need good people. And he knows how to follow the rules and play by the rules. And he's also quite ruthless if he has to be. We also need someone to kill zombies that maybe are still around. And we're going to take Tommy Butera because I think the one thing about Butera that I will say that I have somewhat respect for is to me and in my research, Tommy Butera was not a true psychopath. Tommy Butera to me, I believe killed because he was told to kill. I don't think he particularly enjoyed killing people. I think he did what he had to do. He was a hitman and that was that. I don't look at him as like, I feel like Roy DeMeo and some of these guys, like they were like psychos, you know, or the Casso, people like that. So those would be the people that I would keep: Salerno, Marcello, Delacroce, Butera. And obviously we would go from there. And obviously I can't sit here forever and name mobsters, but those would be a couple I'd start my community with. That's actually a pretty interesting question. That's the kind of questions we want, because again, this show, it's all about sometimes the audience and having fun and being interesting with it. Blake Smith, thanks for listening. He says, there's a fair amount of mob history in the new show, The Offer on Paramount Plus, Columbo, Gallo, etc. Your thoughts on the accuracy, if you've seen it. I have not seen The Offer, and I've obviously, there's only so much time in the day, I think, sometimes, and I was finishing a rewatch of The Wire, and I had to go to New York for a while, and I was sick, and there's just a lot going on, so I haven't gotten around to watching it yet. That being said, I don't know how much I'd really want to watch it, quite honestly. I was never, you know, I like The Godfather. To me, it's not one of my all-time favorites or anything. I'll probably check it out at some point. I think it's only 10 episodes, so I'll probably catch it and kind of go from there. But I know Joe Colombo's featured in it, a guy I'm not real fond of, quite honestly, but I'll probably check it out. But I can't necessarily answer your question because I haven't seen it. But if I know films and TV like I usually do, I would say it's probably not accurate, at least not all of it. It's very rare that you get a film that's completely accurate. In fact, I don't know of any, quite honestly. I think the most accurate film that I've probably seen to date would be, you know, probably a Goodfellas or Casino or Gotti. Those are probably the most historically accurate. And they all have their own flaws as well. Now, kind of basing your question, I will say this about films. One of the things I'm going to be doing over the next, let's say, 6 months is one thing I'm going to be adding to the show is occasionally I'm going to do critical reviews of films, mob films. And I'm going to bring on some friends of mine that are versed in the film world, guys that have done movie podcasts and things of that nature. And we're going to do kind of some deep dives into films, maybe ones you've seen or haven't seen, discuss the accuracy, discuss our overall thoughts on them. So that's something I think we can add to the show and make it fun. It'll be kind of the critical film review episodes. So I think it all goes hand in hand. So that's something we can look forward to. Will NY, he asks, and thank you for listening, Will. You can do more than a few episodes on Ontario, Hamilton, and Toronto, and Montreal. There's a ton of content. So not really a question. Yeah, Guy, I get these questions all the time about Canada. It first of all, is not something that I'm particularly, you know, well-versed in. That being said, I will get to it eventually. This is a weekly show. This is not something that I do, you know, 5 days a week or something. Eventually, we'll get to it, I promise. I kind of have it set and I kind of just go from there. But absolutely, I'll get into some Vitor Rizzuto stuff and maybe Musitano at some point. That guy, Caesar, thanks for listening. What cartel is currently the most powerful in Mexico? It seems like the Sinaloa has been the most show and newsworthy, but currently, who is the most powerful? So I don't really talk much about cartels. That being said, it's not that I don't care about them. I spend a lot of time. I'm very well versed in the cartel world. The reason I don't talk about it is because to me, it's very powerful. And this show is about the mafia, and it's such an ever arcing thing. Those are huge organizations. They're transnational organizations. As far as who's the biggest and most powerful, you really hit it on the head. Sinaloa has always been the most powerful. And if you know anything about Joaquin Guzman, he kind of took it from kind of a group that battled with people to becoming a group that had a fierce reputation and is among the biggest in the world. Sinaloa is always going to be top. That being said, I mean, CJNG is really picking up territory. And CJNG really hasn't been around for very long. And when I say CJNG, I mean the Jalisco New Generation Cartel. They're based out of Jalisco, which is a particularly fertile ground for drug trafficking. It's only been around since like 2010. And if you know anything about El Mencho, the group leader or the founder of it, he's been kind of the new Chapo in a way. He's incredibly powerful. He has sort of like a military-like organization, and they're incredibly dominant. Nothing will ever stop these cartels because in the end, most of the money gets filtered up, right? And I heard numbers, and these are like two-year-old, three-year-old numbers, that they're making in essence and upwards as far as assets. I mean, they're in the tens of billions of dollars at this point. CJNG is making a ton of inroads. And by this point, I think they could probably say they're probably one of the more notoriable. They have the most notoriety in Mexico at this point. They're incredibly aggressive and ruthless. They have kind of continued to move into Juarez and Guanajuato and all these different places. So those are going to be the boys at the top. Los Zetas obviously is not kind of where they were in the 2010s. But yeah, I would say right now the CJNG and Sinaloa are still pretty big time. And there's others as well. I'd highly recommend, there's some great websites and some subreddits and things that you can follow that stuff on. And I urge you to check that out. It's not something I talk about real often, but, definitely going on for sure. Dayton from New Hampshire. What's up, my man? Thanks for listening. Why did Vito Genovese and other bosses change the names of their families? Seems disrespectful to Luciano and others who laid the foundation for the future. Definitely, 100%. In fact, I think we can make the case, why haven't we changed certain names and why have we changed others? I think it really was just about power hungry. And obviously, Carlo Gambino, he was going to move to have that done. He wanted to be that capo di tutti capi. Genovese was going to do it too. He was incredibly about power. But then you have guys like Joey Messina who didn't want it done. I always found it weird that some of the families that changed them. Like Gambino, I think back then he obviously was in a different place than he was in the 70s. But that's a good question. We've kind of been posed these questions before. I can't tell you why some are changed and some aren't. You obviously feel like the Colombo crime family probably should have never been the Colombo crime family. Because when we look back, Joe Colombo like really wasn't anything special, right? Why is it the Genovese crime family, not the Luciano crime family? He's kind of the father of the mafia, right? That's a great question. I can't answer it. I guess it just is the sign of when the times were and when they decided to change them. I don't know. Can't really answer that. Eric Bollinger. What do you know about Aldo Magnelli and his Harrisburg, Pennsylvania crew? Yeah. So this was probably, it stopped, I believe, in the 90s, early 90s, but it's still, you can find it. And I don't know where you're from, Eric. I would have to think you're probably from the Pennsylvania, kind of the area that I'm from. But I've done some research on Magnelli. So Aldo Magnelli was a capo regime in the Buffalino crime family. And he was based out of Harrisburg, had really central Pennsylvania, you know, Steelton, had some people in Lancaster County, York County, Harrisburg, kind of that central PA area. He was actually identified in multiple Pennsylvania Crime Commission reports. Pennsylvania used to put out every 4 years a crime commission report, and they'd basically report on crime in Pennsylvania. They would go over basically each area, and they would talk about the different criminal groups in those areas. And they put out, and look, I could be wrong. Maybe it was every year they did it even at some points, but I read one in 1988, 1989, and they went over the Buffalino crime family, and they went over every criminal group, but they would talk about Magnelli and how he really had kind of a grouping in that central PA area. I have to jump to where it is. Just bear with me for a second. I probably should have did this beforehand, but I usually don't look at these questions beforehand. So I just kind of run with it. But in the 80s, they produced some very good information, not only about the Nicky Scarfo crime family, but Buffalino as well. They talk about Buffalino in depth. They talk about Eddie Schiandra in depth, and all the different criminal associates. But here's what I'll tell you to do. I would highly recommend going to Google and typing in 1989 PA Citizens Crime Commission or any of the years. And you can look through it, and it'll tell you a lot about the different families and the different groupings. I don't have it in front of me. I probably should have did a little research. I apologize for that. And maybe I can get into it at another date, or I can send it to you or something. But they pretty much detail all of this at length, and you can check that out. So I would highly recommend doing that, because it's pretty interesting. Obviously, a lot of people don't know this stuff exists, and I kind of came across it. Minifan Mafia, what's up, my man? Thanks for listening. He said, when is Chris Klemmer coming on the show? He'll be on soon, down the road, absolutely. He's getting involved with his new digs at Barstool, but he'll be on soon to do some movie stuff with us, absolutely. Tim E., thanks for listening. He says, is the Philly mob still active? Who is the new boss of Philadelphia if they're still active? So they're definitely active. I've been posed this question time and time and time again about who the leader of the crime family is. And I've said it before. I think you can make the case that right now in New York, we have no idea who the boss of any of the families are. I think we have an idea, but no one truly knows. As far as Philadelphia, it's very similar. Now, here's what I'll say. In 2015, according to the government, in a wiretap, at a party involving the Genovese crime family and members of Philadelphia, including Joey Merlino, Joey Merlino was introducing the current boss of Philadelphia, according to him, as Mikey Lancelotti, Mikey Lance. Now, whether he's, you know, I don't know if he's official boss. He may just be street boss. I could be totally wrong. Again, I am not putting anyone in these positions. I don't know. I'm not in the mafia. My guess is, they don't even know. No one knows. One thing I can tell you, though, with certainty, I don't believe Joey Merlino is in control of this family. I don't. I don't think he's even in the mafia anymore. He's in it, but he's not. I don't think he's really active. Most of these guys are going away. Stevie and Sonny Mazzone are gone. Grandy's going away. Massey's been locked up forever. Legambi's retired. Borghese's in a lot of legit businesses now. There's just not a lot left on the street. There's not a lot of rackets anymore. Most of these guys are in legit business. Look at all the old Scarfo guys. You know, Narducci's in business. Pungitore's doing business. Legit business. There's not much left. Is it active? Yeah. Is it floundering? Yeah, it is. Optimistic Vols fan, one of the most supportive people we have. What's happening, my man? Did most mobsters' wives know they were in the mob before marrying them? I would have to imagine many did. Sure. I mean, everyone knows who these guys are, where they're from. A lot of them knew them from forever. So I'd have to think, are there some that didn't? Absolutely. But yeah, I would think so. And they just don't ask too many questions. Right. Next one, Three No Deal Boy. Interesting name. I'll try and participate again. Certainly, Jeff, enjoying the fruits of your work and efforts. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Not really a question, but I appreciate you looking into the episode and making your presence known and for the words. Thank you so much. I haven't listened to Marcella episode yet. I'm new to the podcast. Well, we thank you for being here, Harrison Hunt. But I thought Giancana was on tape saying we killed the wrong brother. No, as we said last week, that was Santo Traficante said that. Now, Giancana maybe said something in a similar tone. I don't believe he said that, though, as far as I know. Philip Mario, do the Philly guys have anything to do with Local 54 in Atlantic City? Currently, I don't believe so. I don't actually know, but I don't believe so. Years ago, sure, but I don't believe they do now. I don't think there's much going on in Atlantic City, as far as I know. Black Cat 997, when do you believe the Chicago outfit became an official part of American Cosa Nostra? I mean, obviously, once Al Capone went away, which was in, you know, the late 30s, early 40s, really when Paul Rica took over, Tony Accardo, when those guys took over. Once that happened, you know, and Nitti was kind of out of the way. You know, I would say then, early 40s, you know, once they started doing the Hollywood stuff and, you know, that would be kind of my timeline there. Dusty Rhodes, why do you think the Philly guys from 12th and Wolf do not turn? I mean, Grandy and Nicodemo on DiPietro. Now, again, that's Grandy had nothing to do with that. He was never charged with it. And we're not going to put him in that because he wasn't involved with that. Whether he was or not, we don't know. But he wasn't involved with it. So I think your question's kind of posed incorrectly. As far as Nicodemo, was it bad? Yeah, I mean, definitely. It was probably stupid if he indeed did do it. Why do you think they stick together? Well, because they're best friends. They've been friends since they were kids. You know, Joey and those guys are all from Wolf Street, Jackson Street. South Philly's small. Everybody knows everybody. People are loyal. They're old school. All these guys are born into that life. Joey was born into it. You know, a lot of these guys are born into that. They have connections everywhere. It's just who they are. They're friends. You know, a lot of these mobsters we know about, you know, Meyer Lansky wasn't going to tell him Lucky Luciano ever. Bugsy Siegel wasn't going to tell him on Lucky. It just wasn't going to happen. They're friends. They've been friends since they were kids. Same thing in Philly. It's not going to happen. As far as Grandy, he's not from 12th and Wolf, but he's very connected. His family was in the mob. Now, his father was an informant, but he grew up in that life. Nicodemo, I mean, he's from South Philly, born and bred. So I remember years ago, I mean, one of my best friends lived across the street from Tony Nick's brother, Ronnie. And he's not in life, but, you know, he's South Philly through and through. Father lives in South Philly still. You know, so all these guys know everybody. Everybody knows everybody in South Philly. It's not a big place. They're friends. All right. We got one or two more here, and then we will get into Bobby Manna. Deborah McElroy, one of the best listeners we have. Is it possible that Gotti knew about the indictments and upcoming arrests that he would ultimately be put away? He called Sammy back from being on the lam so he would also be arrested. He didn't want Sammy out while he was in jail, afraid Sammy would take over as boss. I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, they were all arrested at the same time. I'm not sure if you're asking a question or if it's more of just a statement. Did he know about the indictments? Look, I'm sure at some point he thought at some point he'd be arrested. Did he know that the indictments were happening? Not that I know of. No. Absolutely not. I don't know if that's more of a question or what, but no, I don't believe he knew about anything. I'm sure he thought eventually he'd be arrested, but like I said, no, he didn't know about anything. Cocaine Jesus, how high of a rank does a member need to be for you to holster your superpower of stealing anyone's girl? Well, I wouldn't do that to any mobster. I'm not going to do that. All right. Good questions, guys, this week, as always. Let's get into Bobby Manna. For all the people that hate the Q&A, they can skip forward, and I will put that in the thing. And for some that do, well, here we are. We're meeting back up. Let's get into Bobby Manna on the sit-down. Louis Bobby Manna was born December 2nd, 1929, in Hoboken, New Jersey. Interestingly enough, Bobby Manna's father, Mauro Manna, was actually a big-time bootlegger. And upon the birth of his son, he was very prolific in that industry. He was very big in the New Jersey waterfront, particularly in Jersey City. And he was actually an accomplished hitman, according to an FBI report. He was listed many times, actually, in waterfront investigations by the FBI. And he actually, Mauro Manna, had an arrest record going back to 1917. So way before Bobby was even a thought. And, you know, he would be jammed up many times. He was a respected guy. So look, as we hear time and time again, a lot of these individuals, their lives and fates are already decided for them, you know, kind of like we just talked about with the Philly people or, you know, Bruno Indelicato or John Gotti Jr. or whoever. Their fates are decided. They live in these Italian neighborhoods. They don't want to be poor like, you know, other people, and they go into the mob. Bobby Manna would quickly follow his father into the life. It was actually common knowledge that by his early mid-20s, Bobby Manna was actually a made man in the Genovese crime family. It was said that he was made by 1955. And really one thing that gained the mob's notoriety was the fact that Bobby Manna was an accomplished bookmaker and loan shark. He had a huge loan sharking business, had it really his entire career. And he was someone that knew how to make money. And that's the first thing, you know, can you make money? Are you shrewd? Can you do those sorts of things that are going to get you noticed? Can you be a leader as well? And as we know that during this time, you know, really in the 50s, in the late 50s, early 60s, they were really taking control from, at this point when he becomes made, Frank Costello's in control. He then resigns in 57. Genovese takes over. And Manna kind of slots in. Now, coming up, Bobby Manna was actually in the crew of Tony Bender Stralla, which, for anyone that isn't aware, before Vincent Gigante took over the Greenwich Village crew, the original Greenwich Village crew was run by Tony Bender. Tony Bender was a very close associate of Vito Genovese. He was a strong and formidable bootlegger, came up under Joe the Boss, and then joined the Luciano crime family, becomes a capo under Luciano, and then is an underboss under Vito Genovese. And once Vito Genovese becomes boss, he becomes underboss. Vincent Gigante takes over the Greenwich Village crews. But initially, for like 3 years, Bobby Manna would actually work out of Greenwich Village under Tony Bender. He would ultimately become very close with Vincent Gigante and slot right in under Vinny Gigante in the late 50s, early 60s. Now, Bobby Manna would actually live at 130 Houston Street. He had an apartment there, and that would allow him to ultimately do his business in New York. But his power base, Bobby Manna, was in New Jersey. As we know, and as I said, he was a New Jersey guy. He would actually work, and his power base was out of a Hoboken eatery called Casella's. It was at 615 First Street, and it was owned by his second in command, Mats Casella. And that's where they would do their business, Bobby Manna. But as I said, he was very connected in New York, particularly under Vinny Gigante. And that would be a great relationship he would have really his entire life. As I said as well before, he was making a ton of money. But look, there needs to be more than just loan sharking and bookmaking. As we know with the Genovese crime family, you're going to get into the waterfront stuff. You're going to get into the labor rackets, that sort of thing. It was said that Bobby Manna made tens of millions of dollars per year. And what he'd ultimately do is he graduated to becoming very big in those power bases, the huge ports. He was getting involved with waterfronts like his father. He was big in the unions. He was big in garbage. He wanted to be that kind of guy. And that's what you have to be. If you're in the Genovese crime family and you have a leadership role, you can't just be a leg breaker and a bookmaker. You've got to be more. You got to do more. Obviously, once Vito Genovese goes away in the 60s, he would still have some control of the family really until, let's say, 69, he obviously dies. Now, the boss, at least the front boss in the street, you had Tommy Ryan, Eboli, you had certain people. Ultimately, who would take over is Benny the Squint Lombardo. He kind of becomes acting boss in 65-ish, at least on the street. But he becomes official boss in 1969. Now, weirdly enough, a lot of people ask me about Benny the Squint. There's not a lot known about him. He was kind of a mysterious guy. Comes out of Harlem. He was under Sugar Mike Coppola. He was close with Tony Salerno. He takes control of the family. And up until 81, when he kind of steps aside, that's when Vinny Gigante takes over. At that point, once he takes over in 81, Vinny Gigante would make his old friend Bobby Matta, who was his top guy in the Greenwich Village crew, very capable, very good leader. He makes him consigliere. And you look at that, you kind of look at that leadership, right? So in 81, when Chin takes over, okay, so he's the boss, street boss Salerno, okay, underboss Sammy Black Santoro, who, if you know anything about him, he was out of Harlem, very close with Salerno, very powerful. He was eventually the mentor of Barney Belomo, who we've talked about, who's now allegedly the boss of the family. And consigliere was Bobby Matta. I mean, that's an incredibly powerful group. Gigante, Salerno, Sammy Black Santoro, and Bobby Matta. It's crazy. It's crazy leadership. Now, he would run New Jersey for the Genovese, and that was huge because all four capos in New Jersey directly reported to Bobby Matta. Now, it's important to realize that New Jersey has a large swath of Genovese people, very powerful area, right? A lot of people down there, a lot of families and factions down there. Guys like, Little Larry Dentico, he was out of New Jersey. Tino Fiumara. All sorts of guys were in New Jersey, and they needed kind of that base of who they reported to. And he owned Jersey for the Genovese family. Is that simple? Now, around this time, kind of an offshoot topic, but it's important. Philadelphia was having its own issues. Angelo Bruno is whacked by a guy called Antonio Caponegro. Now, Caponegro is from Newark, and he is connived basically by, certain members of the Genovese, including Fonzie Thierry and Gigante, to basically get Bruno out of the way. They can install their guy. And the reason they wanted to do all this, whether it was Manna, Fonzie, all these guys, is they wanted to kind of muscle in and take over the rackets in Atlantic City and have their people in control. And they had that relationship. Look, the truth is, Angelo Bruno was powerful. Right? He was very connected, knew Buffalino, knew all these different people, and they wanted their puppet down in Philadelphia. So they got this Caponegro to bite and believe that he had a chance. They then ultimately killed Caponegro and installed, who they wanted there. But it allowed them to kind of have that Machiavellian move and to make it happen. Bobby Matta would be a part of that group. Now, the longstanding issue that Bobby Matta had, ultimately, he made a lot of money. He was very powerful. He was a great consigliere, but the thorn in his side, like many, was John Gotti. John Gotti starts muscling in. He starts muscling into, different things in North Jersey. He's messing around with the Cavalcantes. He's muscling in the stuff that he shouldn't be muscling in. And what does he do? He starts messing around in Jersey, and that bothers Bobby Matta. The Genoveses didn't like Gotti. We all know that. They didn't respect him after what he did with Paul Castellano in the mid-80s. And the problem that the Genovese had was around this time, Tony Salerno's getting jammed up. you know, Gigantes has this crazy act in full effect. And Bobby Mattis says basically he's thinking as kind of the guy in command, because Gigantes kind of out of, you know, he's in the streets. He's not the official boss at Salerno. Salerno's out of the way. So he almost in a way is the de facto head of the family. He's making a lot of big decisions. He comes up with an idea. Let's off Gotti. Now in conversations, he talked regularly about kind of where the family was going. He talked about the 10-year plan of different real estate opportunities and the coastline and all the stuff that they had envisioned they wanted to do. And they were going to reap all the profits from all this different stuff, from the coastlines and all these different things. But then he also realized that Gotti was a problem. And in 1987, he would say, quote, "You know, this should be good and fast if it's John Gotti." I think he was smart enough to recognize that Gotti, like we all kind of realized, was a problem. You know, he was ultimately going to be a big issue. And a lot of people wanted John Gotti dead. I mean, people wanted him killed. Bobby Manna was at the top. Now, some of this stuff would be questioned years later, and we'll get into that, by the attorney for Bobby Manna, and that this was not an actual conspiracy to kill anyone or whatever. And we'll ultimately talk about what happened. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that Bobby Manna would ultimately also be involved in. Also discussed in some of these conversations was the murder of a man called Irving Schiff. Now, Irving Schiff was a businessman of sorts that was involved with basically money laundering for the Genovese family. And there was talk that Irving Schiff was, you know, taking profits. He was skimming, if you will, which is a really bad idea. If you're going to skim profits, you probably should be skimming them from the most the powerful criminal element in the country. Now, the funny thing about Irving Schiff was he was about 350 pounds. I mean, he's a gigantic individual. So one night on August 8th, 1987, Irving Schiff, who, by the way, was very rich, very well put together, he heads to the Upper East Side with a beautiful woman on his arm. His Lincoln Continental is double parked. He gets out to go to a restaurant called Ristorante Bravo Sergio that evening. Very nice August evening. Goes in, gets really a great menu. Caesar salad, shrimp cocktail, burolatini, rigatoni with bacon, you know, a nice dessert, you know, all sorts of stuff. About 2 hours after he sits, a gunman runs in and shoots him two times in the back of the head. Now, police and the FBI are called in. They question employees. No one saw anything, blah, 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 blah. There was only 12 tables in the restaurant. And ultimately, they would find that Bobby Manna, they would allege, was involved with this. They would claim the shooter was a guy called Richard DeCizio. Now, DeCizio was a associate of Robert Manna, or Bobby Manna. And, you know, he was instructed to kill him because Schiff was basically taking money off the top. Now, ultimately for Bobby Manna, he would be indicted on June 26, 1989 for conspiring to not only kill Irving Schiff, in aid of racketeering, but also the murder conspiracy of killing John Gotti and Gene Gotti. He would kind of basically say that he never conspired to kill anyone. And look, obviously, as we know, John Gotti was never killed because he died in prison, and Gene Gotti is still alive today. But for him, there were no murders. There were conspiracies to commit murder, but there were no murders. For Bobby Manna, that would be the end. Judge Marion Trump Berry, in September of 1989, after he was convicted of this crime, would sentence Bobby Manna to 80 years in federal prison. That was in 1989. Fast forward to today, you know, more than 30 years after being convicted in federal court in Newark, Bobby Manna is still alive. And basically what his attorney Jeremy Iandolo is doing is they continue to make compassionate release pleas to have Bobby Manna released. And the truth is, you know, Bobby Manna is 92 years old. They cite that he has numerous health issues and he's not a threat to society, which I've said before, we should not have anyone over the age of 80 in federal prison. They're too brittle. Now, Manna would say, as their attorney would say, that he has hypertension, he has Parkinson's, he can't take more than a step or two. He's in poor health. Guy's been in prison for 33 years. You have to ask yourself, has he paid his debt to society? This is not someone that chopped off heads. This is not someone that raped women. This is not someone that ultimately I think is a major danger. I'm not sure he's going to get out and become the you know, leader of the family again. You know, most of these gangsters that get out of prison that are old, they usually don't go back. But they continue to contend that he's, you know, still frail and has medical issues, but that the nature of him as a criminal and his leadership in the family outweighs his age and medical issues, which is nuts. I mean, he can't even speak, for Christ's sakes. Now, could it be a, you know, phony? I don't think. But it looks like Bobby Manna will die in prison. It's just that simple. Now, is he evil and dangerous? I don't think. That's what the feds would say he was. Now, I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that in 2004, the FBI claims that he was involved with a murder plot on not only the judge Marion Barry, but also Samuel Alito and U.S. prosecutor Michael Chertoff. Now, again, they would bring that to court. It never really went too far, but I think they're holding a grudge against Bobby Manna. Whether that actually happened, I don't know. As of December 2021, Manna is at the FMC Medical Center in Minnesota, Rochester, Minnesota. His projected release date is in 2054, which will be like 125 years old. So he's not getting out. The only way he can get out is by compassionate release. And the latest one in 2021, November of 2021, was denied. I think it's crazy that Bobby Manna is still in jail. He maybe has 2, 3, 4 years left, if that. But you have to think to yourself, I mean, how does this make sense? Okay, so there's a guy that people probably know about. He's in the Colombo crime family, Vito Guzzo. Now, Vito Guzzo admitted to 4 murders, admitted to it. He was a trigger man, pulled them all. He got 38 years. Now, you know the difference between the two? Bobby Manna didn't plea. Guzzo did. And this goes a lot back, and I think a lot of these gangsters are really starting to, A, they want to be gangsters. I get it, but think of Bobby Manna pleas to these. Bobby Manna probably gets 20 years if he pleas to these. He wasn't the trigger man. In fact, you know, only one person died and he didn't do the shooting. He was just conspiring to allegedly do it. If Bobby Manna pleased to this, he would have been out in mid 2000s. At worst, you know, 2007, 2008, he'd been home 12, 13 years by now. But again, you have these hard-headed gangsters that, again, there's no shame in it, but you also then can't late in your life say, well, I want to get out. Well, you should have thought about that. Should have pleaded to this. Guys, did they do it? This whole I'm not going to plead thing because it admits that I'm in the mob. You know, they do it now. I know back then they didn't do it. And Manna would never do it. Manna is a stone cold hitter. And he's a stone cold, you know, gangster. But it hurts that he's trying to get compassionate release because ultimately, if he'd have just pled to this stuff, at worst, he gets 20 years. Maybe he'd been out by now. But due to that, going to trial, he's going to die in prison. He ain't getting out. They're not going to give him compassionate release. The feds hate the mob too much. It's not going to happen. It's just a rough run of the cards. But in the end, we have to say, you know, Bobby Manna is a guy that really was one of the straws that stirred the Genovese family and really was what made them the most powerful criminal syndicate in the country during the 80s, late 70s. Under Gigante, Salerno, Manna, they were incredibly powerful. Manna was a very rich man. He controlled the New Jersey faction. He made a lot of money. But in the end, he ended up where everyone else ends up. As I said, Bobby Manna is 92 years old. On December 2nd, he will turn 93. We'll have to keep up to date as to whether maybe the feds ever let him out. We need to get a petition together. Let this guy out, for God's sakes. I mean, it's just too much. He's paid his debt to society. Now, before we end, I do want to bring up, I want to talk just for a quick second about Marion Trump Berry, who ultimately is related to Donald Trump. And I mentioned that they would say that Bobby Manna allegedly wanted to have her killed. Obviously, I don't think anyone will contend that he wasn't a part of the mafia, but there's really very little proof that this ever happened. I feel like some of these times these gangsters just say things in passing and that there's no real, there's no legitimate kind of issue here. But they would say that in 2002, there was some sort of request that was forwarded that, there was evidence that, he did this stuff and he harmed to kill these, he allegedly threat to harm or kill these people. And that there was an alleged threat on her life, I guess, according to the petitioner, Judge Berry dealt specifically with a number of claims in her 1998 and 1999 opinions, such as the alleged falsehoods of Special Agent Mulaney, in general, the failure to turn over the contents of 8 boxes containing 302 forms. I guess it had something to do with that. I don't know. But ultimately, it's just a wild story that I just don't think there's any basis for. Her testimony would also, the testimony of this, one of these handlers, these FBI handlers, a question was posed. You told the FBI about people that were your competition. Didn't you know the competition? And mostly what we were discussing here, they talk about Bobby Manna and Marty Casella. Did you know anything about Bobby Manna's prosecution? Yeah, I guess we did. And there's just really some cross examinations, things of that nature. But there's really nothing of note here. I don't think this was ever a big thing, but it seems like maybe the government's holding it against Bobby Manna. I don't know. Will he ever get out? I don't think so. As always, I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you sending in your questions. I always appreciate you all showing love to the podcast here. As I said, if you haven't, make sure you go follow us on Twitter at TheSitDown7. Make sure also, if you enjoy our mafia content, go look for us on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe and watch the videos. You can find us on YouTube at The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, I appreciate you all. Next week, I will tell you right now, we've got a great episode coming out on someone from Philadelphia. So make sure you stay tuned. We also have an interview coming in a few weeks. Next week, we'll have a regular episode, but the week of the 24th, 25th, I'm actually heading to the Jersey Shore for a week or so. So I will be running an interview that I did about a month ago with a former associate in the American Mafia, which I'm sure you'll all enjoy. So a lot to look forward to. We'll get into Trafficante early in August. We'll start doing some movie things as football approaches and that sort of thing. So a lot coming up here on The Sit Down. Make sure you go support our sponsors. Go check out all the testimonials that I do. Some great products that I think you guys will enjoy. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next week here on The Sit Down.